5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. This is your favorite cancer survivorship bus driver, Dr. Tom Iannelli. On the other side of the glass, Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Angel, we have a lot to celebrate today.
So much to celebrate, and I miss sitting next to you, but thank goodness for the technology and allowing us to continue on and moving forward, my dear friend.
We will be back together soon, and I wanted to congratulate you. Not only are you my friend, not only are you my co-host, not only are you on the board of directors, but you're also a podcast legend. And I understand a milestone was reached this week with Have Faith, Let It Begin.
We are at over 1,000 episodes. I cannot believe it.
Congratulations, Angel. From all of the Croc Survivorship Nation, we wish you the best. And another 1,000 and another 1,000 and another 1,000 and another 10,000. That's what we wish for you.
Yeah, never every day you can say you're 1,000 years old.
Exactly. And another thing to celebrate is today, for those of you that are listening, it is December 19th. It is the Sunday before Christmas, and I'm sure everyone is excited. Angel, what are you guys doing in your household to prepare for the big high holidays?
Well, for me this year, because I have to work, it's my year to work for my job. So I figured out that I am going to be home for the even years of my daughters. So Christmas Eve has always been a huge part in my family. It goes back to when I was a kid. So we will spend time in our immediate family on Christmas Eve. Christmas morning, I will do my very best to try to get as much I can get out of my daughter before I head into work. But Christmas Eve is a big part in our family.
Absolutely. Well, Croc Nation, I do want to get a little bit serious in this podcast. Now, we have a theme going this entire month. We did gratitude and generosity. And since this is the podcast before Christmas, I always equate Christmas with the word pause, P-A-Z, which is a meaning for peace. And Christmas is a season for peace. And I thought to myself, well, I end our podcast, and we'll end it today the same way, by wishing everyone a long, healthy, happy, cancer-free life. May God love you. May God be with you. Peace. So I thought about that. And since we end each podcast the same, and since I use the word peace sort of as a farewell, so long, not really farewell, but so long to our Croc survivors that will hopefully join us the following week, I thought about it and I thought, what a nice way to do our Christmas podcast is to speak about peace. And when I speak about peace, I mean, we would like to have peace in all aspects of our life. We would like to have inner peace. We would like to have, human peace, right? We're not at war with everyone. And just peace upon the earth, on this beautiful blue-green marble that we call home. We'd love to have a peaceful earth and a peaceful inside. And then I thought to myself, Angel, we are also celebrating a milestone. We are rounding the corner of our first year at the Croc Podcast. And I always said to everyone, all of our constituents, the board of directors, this is our year of experimentation to see what fits, what doesn't, getting a little better at the podcasting game, just trying to learn. And we've been very honest and very honest in our podcast, and we've tried to do a very huge, diverse, diverse subject matters. And there is one that we've been kind of staying away from, and I'm not sure if it was conscious or subconscious, but we've been staying away from stage 4 cancer survivors that have disease that has metastasized, that have what we would call in the old days terminal disease. And I thought, shame on us for excluding such an important subgroup of our constituency, and that's our stage 4 survivors. And I thought, let me go to the internet and research, do some research and put in some keywords like peace and cancer survivors. And what came up invariably Had nothing to do with our stage one cancer patients that are cured, had nothing to do with how old you were, how young you were, but invariably there was a connection between the word peace and our stage four cancer patients or our quote unquote terminally ill cancer patients. And I thought we would take on that subject matter in this very holy week before Christmas. Are you on board with that?
Hear. You know, it's hard to believe that we didn't. Well, I mean, obviously we never meant to not touch that subject, but it just goes to show you that this show is all about variety because we prepare, even though we do prepare, we kind of let things go in the sense of how it flows. And it's been flowing so well this past year that, you know, we just never got to it. So I would have to say that as your, you know, co-host and somebody who has had the opportunity to listen to these episodes consistently, make sure it makes airway. I don't think we've just had the opportunity to really dive in. So I want to let our viewers know it was never intentional. And I know they believe us, but I think they need to understand that, you know, we hit topics that also we were probably going to maybe do in years from now, but it just came up because that's the path that the Croc podcast took us.
And we believe that, you know, nothing is coincidental that our dear Lord and our creator opens these doors for a reason. And perhaps Christmas, maybe there's a couple of listeners that need this podcast. So that's the way I'm going to be looking at it.
You're here.
Let's talk about this paper. So the paper comes out of the National Institute of Health. And the name of the paper is called Peace, Equanimity, and Acceptance in the Cancer Experience. The acronym is PEACE, P-E-A-C-E. And it's a validation of a scale to assess acceptance and struggle with terminal illness. So what does that mean in plain language? So these awesome, you know, researchers from Yale and from Harvard, what they did was they put together an inventory. So what is an inventory? It's a questionnaire. They put together a questionnaire and they wanted to know two things. They wanted to know how well a patient with stage four disease that was, you know, in the terminal phase of their illness, how much they understood about exactly where they were and what their prognosis was, and then their emotional response to the same set of circumstances. And I thought it was such a great paper, and I don't really care so much as far as what the paper, you know, the conclusions of the paper, because we're not really interested in an inventory per se, but we're interested in the deeper meaning of the paper. And I think that that's what we're going to concentrate on. So the way I broke it up is into three parts. The first part is how we as physicians and as caregivers can give clarity to our patients in regard to where they stand in their disease state. Point number two is helping them achieve this peace and equanimity. And number three is to protect them from their doctors that might be unrealistic with where they are, mm-hmm. and also protect them from themselves. I saw a patient today, a lovely woman and her husband that I've been following for a few years, who is exactly in this position. And we were talking a little bit about end of life EOL, right? End of life strategies.
Right.
And she was like, I am not raising that white flag. I am not raising that white flag. She didn't want any part of that. And that's cool. That's fine. But there are a couple of circumstances where we have to be a bit more protective of our patients to protect them from themselves. And we have a couple of stories that we're going to tell. But first, definitions. So let's talk about what equanimity means. And it's one of my favorite words. Equanimity means balance. It means evenness, especially under stress. And what a great word for this particular inventory is to have equanimity within the acronym. And I also want to define something that perhaps is one of the obstacles for patients being able to achieve this peacefulness, even at end of life, and the meaning of that. And that's because it's very existential when we have to confront our own mortality. And we've talked about existentialism. We started talking about it with Dr. P.J. Singh, fancies that philosophy. And we've spoken about it as well. But it's a philosophical movement that views our human existence in the context of a set of themes and characteristics. So our human experience is chock full of, you know, a pinch of anxiety and a tablespoon of dread, and then add a couple of, you know, wisps of freedom and awareness of death and the awareness of our existence. And that's kind of what you get with existentialism. And it's a very, very brave philosophy because, you know, religion didn't pop up for nothing.
Right.
You know, religion popped up. And remember, there's a difference between religion and spirituality. But religion popped up because people really didn't feel strong enough to accept this free choice or their free will or their own personal responsibility to create your own meaning in life, become your own. And many people required a bigger establishment, a bigger structure to be able to live without this dread and grief and all of these types of things. So the paper is brilliant in the sense that they really want our patients to achieve this peace and this insightfulness, you know, not so much outside of a spiritual context, integrated into a spiritual context, but to help them get through that, what we call in the business existential crisis. And we want to kind of get past that. And I believe that that's what we're going to do. We all deserve our own happiness and legacy outside of this formalized system. And that's one of the things that end of life patients have to struggle with. And we need to get them through that. Which leads me into the Kroc podcast philosophy about this. We've touched on this as well. And I have been told invariably, if not universally, from every cancer patient I've seen, that they view cancer as a gift in the sense that it provides the antidote for what we call longevity deception. That means that all of us walk around thinking that we're immortal and we're going to live forever. Or if we do realize we're going to die, it ain't going to be tomorrow. So we don't have to worry about it. So let's go back into our little rabbit hole of deception and put our heads in the sand like an ostrich. But rather, that our cancer survivors, especially our terminally ill survivors, they are thrust upon their entire visage, their entire person, a grateful realism. So that helps them in their lives, in the moment, to make them, help them live in the moment, help them make every moment count, and correct any unhealthy trajectories, whether they be in their personal health, whether they be in their spiritual awareness, whether it be in their human interconnectedness, the way they relate to fellow humans, and as they relate to special relationships, you know, spouses, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, coworkers, friends. These are all things that cancer survivors dealing with cancer are way better at than you or me, Angel. Would you agree with that?
Totally agree. 100%.
Now, what would be, you know, it seems like a really easy task, right? We've already identified that people have to deal with end of life in a very realistic and courageous way. And if so, if they're able to achieve that, they will achieve a peacefulness. And if they achieve this peacefulness, then their transition to their next stop would be much less terrifying. And I think that one of the problems, and I identified this as the number one problem, is that doctors, you know, I would give us a D. And the only reason I'm not giving us an F is because there are a few doctors that actually have a, you know, have a clue as far as end of life stuff. But we have a lot of difficulty communicating bad news, communicating truthful prognosis, achieving clarity in end of life circumstances and conversations. And also, I think many of my colleagues, especially in oncology, they are in denial about the prognosis of the patient because they don't want to give up either. Right. And for not for financial reasons or for personal reasons, but oncologists are trained to keep people alive. That's what they do. And I think
it's a good fight.
And I'll tell you, sometimes they go push it a little too far. And I'll tell you a couple stories that will integrate into our podcast this week. So the first story was a dear friend, became friends with her over the years. I've treated her for about 5 or 6 years, and she had metastatic ovarian cancer, and she just passed away this past Sunday. We'll call her Debbie. Her name isn't Debbie, but we'll call her Debbie. I found out she was in the hospital, and I went up to the intensive care unit. She looked terrible. She had sepsis, and she was starting to go down that slippery slope. And they did some workup, they did some x-rays, and they found that she had brain metastasis on top of everything else, sepsis and all these things with a zero performance status. She was not, she didn't even really remember who I was, or it was pretty bad. And the doctors, the interns and, the oncologist called me to do a consultation. And I said to the oncologist, I'm very happy to perform a consultation, but I just want to let you know, there is no way that I'm treating Debbie. I'm not going to treat her. She's not long for this world. And if I'm going to treat her just to treat her, then I'm doing the wrong thing, because it's just, unethical, and we really can't do this. And, after I had this conversation with him and I described, scientifically the reasoning behind my thoughts, he said, you know what? You changed my mind. Absolutely. I'm going to tell the family that no more treatment for her. And she died the next day. But imagine how awful I would have felt to take a friend, throw her on the table, give her one dose of radiation to her brain and have her die a day, a day later anyway. What did I really achieve? And really, this is on us. The other thing that I have concerns about is I have concerns about certain individuals that take on that role as a grief counselor, take on that role of like end of life liaison. And I remember Raina Audish telling us, about the story when she lost her baby and how the nurse came and kind of plopped herself up on the sill in her room and asked her if she wanted to hold her dead baby. And Raina was like, no, thank you. I've been through enough. I'm half dead already, if you haven't noticed. And this is not really going to help me make peace with what's going on. And the way she just kind of stayed in the room and was very judgmental to her. And like, if it wasn't like what she would have done, if it wasn't like what she thought was psychologically the healthiest thing to do, she was being judged for that. And I had such a problem with that. And I remember when I did my internship in Newark, New Jersey, and right in the middle of, Newark, which was a total war zone. As a matter of fact, the interns and the residents used to get shot at, as we drove home on a certain street. And I'm thinking, I met this woman, she was the grief counselor, because it was a very high level trauma center. So people would fly in, people who were in accidents or whatever. And she gave a lecture to us. And it was really spooky because like she liked what she did so much that she liked what she did too much, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, I get it.
This is the way I view a grief counselor. Like I want like Clint Eastwood, like to come into the room, and I want him to be like quiet and strong and non-judgmental and like be Clint Eastwood. Like, don't come in like a cheerleader, that you're a grief counselor and, this will pass, time will heal, blah, 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 blah. No, that's wrong. And I really believe that's wrong. People like that nurse in that experience with Raina, the grief counselor that I met, like our patients do not need to be judged. They do deserve the truth. They do deserve absolute transparency as it relates to their illness so they can prepare themselves for end of life situations. But by no means do they have to perform or fit in a box that, some psychologist or social worker or whatever, read a book once about death and dying, and they feel that they're going to help them go through all the phases of death. No, that's not the way it should be. And I think that's important for us to say. But there is something good that's happened in our medical world, not just in cancer, but in, you know, terminally ill patients. And that's the rise of a specialty called palliative care. So palliative care, we're going to do an entire podcast on palliative care, but palliative care, I call them the prognosis police. I call them the pain patrol, and I call them the dignity doctors, because they do this stuff that we're talking about way better than we do as oncologists or just as generalists. They're able to sit with the patient and really be very transparent about their prognosis and go through, you know, the data and go through life expectancies.
Right.
They're very good at taking people out of pain. And believe it or not, you would think oncologists would be great at that. We're not that great at that. And they also are looking for the benefit of the patient to have them uphold their dignity. Being in a hospital may not be the greatest place for somebody who's dying, because you're in an environment that's not loving or caring like we all would think that a person should be surrounded by their loved ones, but not necessarily. Again, I don't want to turn into that, you know, grief counselor who tells people what I want. I want right. them to tell me what they want. So Angel, let's take a minute and let's go through this inventory. And what's really cool is the inventory, as I said, the first part is already known. People have been doing this forever, and that's called the peaceful acceptance of illness. And what makes this such a great paper is that there's a second part to the inventory that's called struggle with illness scale. So the putting them both together, if one isn't powerful enough, when you put them both together, it's very powerful, and a physician can get a really good pulse on their terminally ill patients as far as where they stand with understanding and cognition of their situation, as well as their emotional response. So the first five are for peaceful acceptance, and it's a scale from not at all to a slight extent, to some extent, to a large extent. So to what extent are you able to accept your diagnosis of cancer? To what extent would you say you have a sense of inner peace and harmony? To what extent do you feel you have made peace with your illness? Number four, do you feel well-loved? And number five, to what extent do you feel a sense of inner calm and tranquility? And then the struggle with illness scale, to what extent do changes in your physical appearance upset you? To what extent does worry about your illness make it difficult for you to live from day to day? To what extent do you feel that it is unfair for you to get cancer now? To what extent do you feel that your life as you know it is now over? To what extent do you feel angry because of your illness? To what extent do you think your illness has beaten you down? Mm-hmm. And to what extent do you feel ashamed or embarrassed by your current situation? So Angel, if you were to take that and do it honestly, don't you think that your caretakers care? Well, yeah, your caretakers too, but your caregivers, your doctors and nurses, well, don't you think they would have a better idea of who you are and what you're about?
Without a doubt. And it puts a better light and a perspective as to the communication level between you and the caretaker and caregiver.
It's like a powerful 1-2 punch. Absolutely. Because you're identifying cognition and understanding, and you're also peppering in the emotionality of the situation.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about knowledge is power, knowledge about prognosis is a prerequisite for end-of-life decisions and preparations. Patients with unrealistic views, doctors with unrealistic views, tend to choose inappropriate, invasive measures which hurt, do nothing except cause suffering. And that's what this podcast is about, is to try to help the practitioner bring the patient to where they have to be, where they could then, I can't say enjoy their end of life, but be peaceful about their end of life. You okay with that?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you got me. Yeah, that's perfect.
So confronting loss, there's a psychologist by the name of Erickson who said that the final stage of human development, which occurs in late adulthood, is our confronting our mortality with integrity. Our postmodern thinking is live well, quote unquote. But the truth is, we also want to, quote unquote, die well. I don't want to sound like a Klingon, you know, from, yeah. you know, from Star Trek, but that's really, there's a lot of truth in that. And we need to help our patients find the meaning in their journey through end of life, through their end of life journey, as I said. Literature shows that advanced cancer patients who were cognitively aware of their terminal status and considered themselves at peace had lower ratios of psychosocial distress and higher rates of advanced planning. So that tells you everything. If we're able to help our patients get through this, to understand and be peaceful with it,
right.
We would have done a great job. But I do have to be honest with you, Angel. I can't say that I'm the most courageous lad in the land. As a matter of fact, I used to always joke that if I was on the Titanic, I would have been the ugliest woman on that lifeboat because I would have found a wig and I would have put a dress on and I would have jumped into one of those boats and I would have been absolutely the ugliest woman on that lifeboat. Yeah. And, you know, another pet peeve that I have about these types of professionals, and if, you know, God bless them, you know, there are many that are amazing, but there are many that are not so amazing. And the thing that bothers me is, you know, going back to Raina's nurse, it's like, this is not easy stuff. It's not like, okay, we've just given you the keys to the, you know, to the cookie, you know, to the cookie drawer, eat as many cookies as you want. This is not that. I mean, we as humans have many shortcomings of our own humanity. There are many, many Achilles heels. You know, it's much easier said than done to achieve these things that we're trying to achieve. There's a grief counselor disconnect. Like, they're not connecting with the patient. They're just basically telling the patient what's normal, quote unquote, and what they should be experiencing, not necessarily what they are experiencing. And let's face it, who's Buddha? Like, I'm not Buddha. I'm like the guy running, you know, if there's somebody with a gun or I'm running the other way. And you know what? I could really motor this body if I have to. You know, somebody chasing me with a knife, I'm not like fighting. I'm running. I'm going to be honest with you. The other problem is young patients, you know, having yes. to deal with end of life. Really, I put WTF, right? Like really like a 40-year-old, a 30-year-old. Imagine their anger, their despair, their sense of unfairness. It's like, God, you know, how could you, like, the average life expectancy be 75 and I'm like 24 and I'm going to die? Like, you just gypped me 50 years, you know, imagine. And they haven't reached that part. Remember I mentioned Erickson's, you know, his inventory on that. And he said that this really doesn't happen till late adulthood. I'm noticing it as I'm getting into my mid 60s. I'm starting to feel more peaceful about these types of things, where in the old days I would be like absolutely crazy bad about it. But what if you're 40, you're not 63 or 62? What if you're 30? What if you're 20? That's a huge problem. And the other problem with this paper, and again, we're not getting into super duper uber detail, but it is, again, one of those papers that we see, you know, it's a lily white paper, you know, consisting of all white people who are insured, who are Catholic, and who have money and who have jobs. You know, that's not what the world is. I mean, you know, we all don't live in a cute little New England town, you know, with a grocery store and a, you know, and you know, a hardware store. This is like reality. Reality is a lot of us are not white. A lot of us are of color. A lot of us don't have money. A lot of us are not insured. A lot of us don't have spirituality that is Christian based. So, you know, that is one of the shortcomings of the paper. But I still believe the way we're associating with this paper really doesn't matter, because we're not trying to prove a point. We're trying to take the meat out of this paper and then, right. you know, air fry it to perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we want to be aware of? What are patients, what are we looking at? So here's a list of a couple of things for you guys, for my dear practitioners to look at in your patients to see where they stand on these scales. So number one is you can use the scale. All you have to do is, I'll put the paper up on the website, and you guys can dig into it and you can get the inventory and you can have your patients take this inventory or have your nurse take it for them. And the number one spot that we could help them as well is looking at their socio-demographics and their disease, you know, attributes. So think about this. Every culture, right? Even the difference between males and females, ages, races, ethnicities, marital status, income, insurance, religion, education. These are all individual to each cancer survivor. There are no two that are exactly alike. So you have to know that person. You have to know all of their socio-demographics.
Right.
Some cultures, you know, suffering quietly is the way to go. Some cultures, like my culture, you know, we scream like wild people, like we're screaming and writhing in pain and, you know, we're crying and we're hugging and we're like, you know, angry and throwing dishes and, you know, and that's just, you know, it is what it is, right? So that's true. We need to know this about our patients. The other thing is, think about this, Angel. Don't you think that, you know, if a patient is at end of life, but is stable as far as pain, stable with other medical issues and, you know, but they're going to die, but they're generally medically stable otherwise, don't you think they'll do better or be able to reach the point that we want them to reach?
Absolutely.
If they didn't have terrible symptoms or have a million other comorbidities, you know, some of our cancer patients are so complex, they might have a lung cancer with a DVT and then a pulmonary embolism, and then they get sick from the chemotherapy and they lose their hearing, and then their fingers are numb and their toes are numb and they can't walk, and then they get a facial droop and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's going to be hard to sell them on psychologically, you know, balanced reasoning, you know, when they feel like, you know what, you know, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Intrapersonal attributes. So here's another thing that the paper made very clear, and this is important. Many of our patients, many of the people we know, including me and my co-host Angel, you know, have our own psychiatric illnesses. We have our own issues, either with depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, panic, or whatever. And Angel has always been extraordinarily truthful and has been very brave to share his experience through depression in his life and how useful a therapist has been. So these are things you have to identify in your cancer survivors. You have to identify their level of spirituality and what their spirituality consists of. You have to also look at their coping strategies. So I had a patient, I literally saw this patient yesterday. It's so cool that I'm putting her on this podcast as an example. She's an end of life terminal patient. You know what she did last summer? Now, she happens to be doing very well, by the way, because she's responding to immunotherapy, which will be another podcast. But say she wasn't, and at the time she was looking, you know, down the barrel of her own life. Well, you know what she did?
No, what?
She had her funeral.
Are you
except
kidding?
She was alive. She had a party, called it her funeral, invited all the people she loves, and they had the kicking ass. That's not a word, but we just made it up. The kicking ass this time of the entire universe.
I've never heard of that.
Isn't that awesome though?
It's unbelievable.
Right? Why do you need to wait to have your funeral when you're dead? If you're dying, have the funeral now so you can enjoy the hot dogs, right? You might as well.
Wow. Yeah.
But here's maybe not a good strategy. You know, being told you have 6 months and then going to the liquor store and buying out their entire bourbon selection. So probably not a good idea.
Yeah, right.
Going down to 4th Street in Newburgh and, you know, buying a couple $100 worth of crack cocaine, probably not a very healthy coping.
No, not at all.
And as far as just acceptance, cognitive acceptance, which then will help our patients plan their end of life better, their healthcare proxies, their wills, their advanced care planning, their do not resuscitate orders. These are all things that come once acceptance and dealing with the emotionality of this, comes through. So Angel, let's put it all together. So the way we do it, this Croc podcast, is we come up with thoughts. We look at where we need to be, where our patients need to be, where our survivors need to be. Then we talk about the obstacles, the obstructions, and the challenges. And then we jump over them, we hurdle over them, and we get to what we feel is some potential options and some clarity for being able to solve these issues. So empathetic communication is first and foremost. We doctors need to do a better job, and we have to accept and face that 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is called survival and longevity and life expectancy and prognosis. We are absolutely required to do this. And then we have to find out what are the obstacles. We spent this entire podcast going through what these identified obstacles would be, and let's solve them. Let's help our patients solve them. Number two, all hands on deck. Use every resource available. Use palliative care. Use mental health intervention, pain control, divinity intervention, support groups, patient advocates. If there's a snake charmer named Eddie that might help somebody, let's get them. If there's somebody who does acupuncture, let's get them. If there's somebody who needs medical marijuana prescribed, let's find them. Let's figure out what these patients need to get to where they need to be. Administrative assistance. We need to help our patients. It's hard enough even for me to fill out one of those DNR forms. Imagine a patient who's not computer savvy. Let's get them some help. Let's get some volunteers to help them to get the DNRs, to get their directives, to have an idea, help them plan out what it is that they want in their end of life planning. And accessibility. Angel, we need to be available. We need to be humble. We need to be grateful. Think about this. This amazing human that we're taking care of, that's looking down the barrel of their own mortality, has allowed us the privilege to be part of what I think is the most holy and sacred part of our entire human journey. And that's the end of our human journey. And they have opened that door. They have invited us in to be an observer, to be there with them. So give them your phone number. Let them call you 24/7. And whatever you need to do, hold their hand, bring in food for the family when they're sitting vigil, pray with them, sit with them, cry with them, laugh with them. Ask for stories, do whatever you have to do, because you have been granted one of the greatest gifts in the world as a healer, and that's to be part of a patient's transition from their life to their next life. Absolutely. Angel Santana, anything to add?
No, I think you summed it up very well. When you were saying that last two sentences, I keep thinking of the word or phrase, guiding light. Be a guiding light. Be that, yep. That shine. Be that person that we as patients look up. People say you look up to other people, and we look up to our doctors, and the doctors have to have that good side and great bedside manner. It all comes down to when you first decided to be a doctor, there was a reason. It wasn't all about accolades. It was something about being or wanting to be a doctor or a specialist. It motivated you. And I think a lot of it had to deal with helping people. So it's that old expression, if you have to go back to your roots, go back to when you first started, what made you motivated to be where you are? And if it was helping people, then it should never have left. And if it did, find the light so that you can shine for your patients.
Angel Santana, we end this podcast as we end every podcast, and we actually began this podcast with these words. On behalf of Angel Santana, myself, the entire Croc Podcast Board of Directors, we wish every single cancer survivor, especially during this week of peace and this week of Christmas, we wish you a long, healthy, happy, cancer-free life. May God be with you. May God love you. Peace.